It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday the 24th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Mobile World Congress kicks off today in Barcelona, Spain. The massive tech conference is always full of exhibitions and big announcements from tech companies. This year's event might see a new phone announcement from Samsung, but the big theme in Barcelona will also be messaging apps, and not just Facebook's purchase of messaging service WhatsApp. Julie Osk is with the research group Forrester. She says the interest in messaging apps is part of a natural progression.
If you think about the history of these apps, a lot of them started because messaging services were expensive in foreign countries, and then they grew up and they became feature-rich, fun apps and now platforms that, you know, I look to not just to communicate and engage with my friends, but to subscribe to brands, be in the know, and even buy stuff these days.
Now, Osk says there's a big land grab going on, and the real estate is your tiny phone screen.
You know, KakaoTalk and WhatsApp get almost 200 minutes per week of a consumer's time on the phone. That's a lot of time. And if you think about the eyeballs shifting to mobile and how little spend there is today, there's a tremendous amount of upside that's potentially captured by these companies that have these large audiences.
And that means someday the companies that don't have the cash to buy these messaging apps will soon have to pay them or their parent companies to rent some tiny billboard space. Speaking of phones, with its sale of Motorola Mobility to Chinese tech company Lenovo, you'd be forgiven for thinking Google was trying to get out of the smartphone-making business. But the company just released a prototype phone called Project Tango, and it has some sensors that help it produce some eye-popping 3D scanning technology. Like, wave it around at the room you're in, and it'll generate a model. Are we impressed? Let's ask Will Arimus of Slate. Hey, Will.
Hey, Ben.
Project Tango. Is this an amazing invention or is it a parlor trick?
It's a prototype.
And basically the phone, you slowly move the phone around and it will form a three-dimensional model of the room that then you could travel around and look at as you might the street view of Google Maps or something.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. What Google is trying to do is start mapping indoor spaces.
How might the company use this kind of information in a more interesting way?
Yeah, this is completely in line with Google's stated mission to organize the world's information. So if you can think about the fact that you're going around and potentially mapping everything around you as you go, you're turning the environment around you into data. And the uses for that just could be incredible. I mean, think about people who are vision impaired. If this technology got really good, they could just follow in the path of someone else who had already gone through a building and mapped it.
Is there a scary side to this?
It's not fundamentally different, I think, from the outdoor mapping that Google is doing, except that we tend to view indoor spaces as
private.
For this project to really work, it's going to require cooperation from people in most cases. Google isn't going to be sending spies into your home to map the interior of your house. You're going to have the option to do that if you want, and maybe there will be a way that you can upload that into some database of the world's indoor maps.
Our friend Will Arimus, who blogs about technology for Slate magazine. Will, thanks, man.
Thanks, Ben.
We've had a bit of a winter break from our regular Techsplainer segment, but we're back, baby. Today we get our friend at Harvard, Jonathan Zittrain, to answer a simple question. Who owns the internet? Professor Zittrain, nice to have you back.
Hello, Ben.
Well, Al Gore invented it, so I would guess that it has some home in the United States, right?
Yes, Al Gore was on one of the key committees providing funding for this, but in a way that was not very proprietary. Now, there are certain key things about the internet that require human, if not institutional, attention to be straight.
There needs to be infrastructure, and usually someone owns infrastructure.
So a really simple example is that everyone or everything using the internet is supposed to have a unique number so it can be addressed. And that used to be done by just one guy named John Postel. And ultimately, it was like, wait, there's just some guy named John doing it? Everybody, especially John, realized this is no way to run a global infrastructure that the internet had been rapidly becoming. And This went through many contortions and ended up with a California nonprofit called ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. ICANN would have an internationally sourced board of directors in an effort to recreate a sort of Madisonian framework for running this unowned thing.
Is that just the way it's always going to work? Or will there be some day when, I don't know, a state makes a grab at actually being able to claim to own this stuff?
I think it will be unlikely that we'll ever see something like a federal internet commission, and that's a good thing. And it would be good probably if there weren't such things in our national counterparts. If what one believes in is free speech worldwide, maybe we don't want countries to be able to check a box about what features of the internet in a very refined way they want and don't want.
Jonathan Zittrain, co-founder of Berkman's Center for Internet and Society. Jonathan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Quick reminder, we want more of your tech questions to answer for TechSplainer. Come on, I know you got some. You don't expect us to ask all the questions on our show, do you? Tweet them at Marketplace Tech or head to our website, marketplacetech.org. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's our show today. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.